The reading and the exposition will begin at verse 13 of chapter 52. I have before me to speak to you on this Song of the Sabbath, one of Isaiah's songs about Christ. The passage is well known. That can create problems. We read it, and it passes through our mind, because we think we know it all. Now I want to take time in my reading to begin with to make certain expository remarks as I go through. I want to place before all of you what I hope are some considerations, maybe a little original, on this passage. Now, the passage, the last three verses of 52, the 12 verses of 53, bring before us five stanzas of three verses each. In each of these stanzas, there are different speakers. I'll indicate the speakers to you. I'll indicate leading ideas in each verse, make a number of remarks, and then I'll spend the rest of the time expounding main ideas in the verses. Now, I can't touch everything, but I hope to lay a basis in your soul today concerning the person and work and the glory of Christ. Verse 13 of chapter 52, God himself is speaking. Behold, my servant shall deal prudently. He shall be exalted and extolled and be very high. Verse 14, the first sentence, God addresses Christ personally, as many as were astonished at thee. The opening of verse 15, please. So shall he sprinkle or astonish many nations. You can see the connection between as and so. As many as were astonished at thee in his humiliation, so shall he astonish many in his glory. The words in between should be in brackets. His visage was so mad, more than any man, and his form more than the sons of men. And in that passage, God is telling you what he saw as to Christ. Verse 15. So shall he sprinkle or astonish many nations. The kings shall shut their mouths at him. For that which had not been told them shall receive, and that which they had not heard shall they consider. Notice, please, God is speaking. Victory through humiliation is the theme. Verse 13, the wisdom of the servant, he shall act wisely. Verse 14, the humiliation of the servant. Many shall be astonished at him in the day of his humiliation. Verse 15, the glory of the servant when he comes in a future day. Now, verses 1 to 3 of chapter 53, and the nation is speaking, looking back to the days of their unbelief. The verses tell us what Christ was before God and before man. Verse 1. Who hath believed our report? And to whom is the arm of the Lord revealed? The arm of the Lord is a divine title. More about that later. For he shall grow up before him as a tender plant, and as a root out of a dry ground. He hath no form nor comeliness, and when we shall see him, there is no beauty that we should desire him. He is despised and rejected of men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And we hid, as it were, our faces from him. He was despised, and we esteemed him not. what he was before God and before man. Verse 1, the servant revealed as the arm of Jehovah. Verse 2, the servant revealed as the plant and the root. Verse 3, the servant revealed as the man of sorrows and grief's acquaintance. Or if you like, verse 1, the message rejected, who hath believed our report. Verse 2, the servant rejected. Verse 3, the servant despised. Now verses 4 to 6. The prophet is speaking. He has before him substitution and salvation. Surely he hath borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. Yet we did esteem him stricken, smitten of God, and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon him, and with his stripes we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned every one to his own way, and the Lord hath laid on him the iniquity of us all. Verse 4, the leading idea, confession. Verse 5, the leading idea, substitution. Verse 6, the leading idea, sin bearing. You will notice, please, in verse 6, all we like sheep have gone astray collectively. We have turned everyone individually to our own way. But Jehovah hath made to meet upon him the iniquity of us all. Verses 7 to 9. Death and burial. The prophet is speaking. He was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. He is brought as a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before her shearers is dumb, so he openeth not his mouth. He was taken from prison and from judgment. Who shall declare his generation? For he was cut off out of the land of the living. For the transgression of my people was he stricken. And he made his grave with the wicked, and with the rich in his death, because he had done no violence, neither was any deceit in his mouth. Death and burial. Verse 7, the servant as the uncomplaining sufferer. He opened not his mouth. Verse 8, the servant in his violent death. He was cut off out of the land of the living. Verse 9, the servant in relation to his burial. You will notice verse 9 carefully. It should read like this. Men appointed his grave with the wicked. That is, they would make his grave testify to his association with criminals, the two thieves. Men appointed his grave with the wicked, But he was with the rich, singular, in his death, plural. What that means I shall indicate in the exposition. But who? The rich man is Joseph of Arimathea. He was with the rich in his death. The reason for that was this. Because he had done no violence, neither was any deceit in his mouth. The tomb would bear witness to the moral excellence of the servant. Finally, please, verses 10 to 12. Triumph and dominion. Verse 10, the prophet is speaking. Verses 11 and 12, God is speaking to close the song as he began it. Verse 10. Yet it pleased the Lord to bruise him. He had put him to grief. And then the prophet looks up into the face of God. When thou shalt make his soul an offering for sin, he shall see his seed. He shall prolong his days, and the pleasure of the Lord shall prosper in his hand. Now God speaks. He shall see of the travail of his soul and shall be satisfied. By his knowledge shall my righteous servant justify many, for he shall bear their iniquity. Therefore will I divide him a portion with the grave, and he shall divide the spoil with the straw, because he hath poured out his soul unto death, and he was numbered with the transgressors, and he bare the sin of many, and made intercession for the transgressors. Triumph and dominion. Verse 10, the prosperity of the servant. The pleasure of the Lord shall prosper in his hand. Verse 11, the satisfaction of the servant. He shall see of the travail of his soul and shall be satisfied. Verse 12, the dominion of the servant. One thing to note, please, will you? Verse 10. It pleased the Lord to bruise him. Now, brethren, it didn't give God any pleasure or happiness to do that. The Lord's pleasure here has in view the future. It pleased Jehovah in the light of his future, of his purposes. It pleased him in that sense to put him to grief. Now notice, please, the middle of verse 10. When thou shalt make his soul a trespass offering, not a sin offering precisely. It's not a sin offering that's in view, it's a trespass offering. The reason for that being is this, that the sin offering was negative. Sin was put away and that was it finished. But a trespass offering produced a result. You remember that, don't you? You'll remember that in the trespass offering, the man offered his lamb to God, and he not only restored the principle, the amount in which he had wronged his brother, but he added 20%. He gave a fifth. So there's a result from a trespass offering, no result from a sin offering. And so it says here, when thou shalt make his soul a trespass offering, for there's going to be a result from this offering, this aspect of the death of Christ. You see, what's the result? Threefold. He shall see his sin. He shall prolong his days, and the pleasure of the Lord shall prosper in his hand. Now back to the first stanza, please. Just a few comments on each of these passages. Verse 13. God is speaking. He's speaking about Christ. He says, behold, my servant shall act wisely. Here you have Christ brought before you on earth as the wisdom of God. The divine servant Matthew says, "Behold, my servant shall prosper." So frequent is the idea that he shall act wisely in view of consequent prosperity. And of course that is true, because out of this life and death and resurrection of the servant shall come an amazing prosperity that will be known throughout the whole of the world and the whole of the universe. Look again, please, verse 13. "He shall be exalted and extolled and be very high." Two aspects, please. One, he shall be exalted in his resurrection. He shall be extolled or lifted up in his ascension. He shall be made very high in his enthronement. Or if you like, taking it forward to the future. Because you will note that this idea of exalted and very high is taken from Isaiah 6. The glory of Adonijah. High and lifted up is Adonijah. And so there's coming a day when the servant shall be lifted up in the day of his glory. High and extolled and lifted up will Christ be. Verse 14. God speaking. Now don't forget, it's God that's speaking here. "As many as were astonished at thee." And he's drawing attention to the ignorant, stolid gaze of the masses as they gazed upon Christ in the day of his humiliation, in the day of his humbling. Men stood there, ignorant, unable to come to a right estimate, unable to come to a true appreciation of all that was taking place. Their hearts and their lives were a mortal waste. God looks down and he says, "As many as were astonished at thee in your humiliation." Verse 15, "So shall he astonish many nations in his glory." In his humiliation, he is distinct in the preeminence of his suffering. In the day of his exaltation, he shall be distinct in the preeminence of his glory. Now you'll notice me, will you? That in verse 15, your authorized version says, "So shall he sprinkle many nations." If that is the idea, then it's Christ coming forth as a royal priest to sprinkle the unclean, leprous nations. Or, if it's poetic justice, "As many as were astonished, startled at thee in the day of your humiliation, so shall he astonish and startle many nations in the day of his glory." Verse 15, "Kings shall be bowed on into silence before the transcendent glory of the Christ." More, these nations, they shall be told them that which they had never heard. They shall see that which they had never considered. Go forward, brethren and sisters. The day of Christ's glory. He's coming down to us. You remember Acts 1? "Ye men of Galilee, why stand ye gazing up into heaven? This same Jesus shall so come in like manner as ye have seen him go." Is that right? How did he go? Slowly he ascended. How will he come back? Slowly he shall descend. Where did he ascend from? Acts 1, the Mount of Olives. Where shall he come back to? Zechariah 14, the Mount of Olives. Slowly he shall descend. Then shall we see the sign of the Son of Man in the heavens, the Shekinah cloud. Every eye shall behold him, and slowly the Christ of God descends, coming right down to split Olivet's mountain and to make for Jerusalem. Then shall be brought to pass Psalm 24, which is not the ascension. It's the entrance of Christ into Jerusalem. "Lift up your heads, O ye gates, ye everlasting doors, and let the King of glory in." And when Christ comes back, note carefully please, as the son of Abraham, he'll claim the land. As the son of David, he'll claim the throne. As the son of man, he'll claim the earth. Got that? Now please, the close of verse 14. God speaking. "His visage was so marred more than that of a man, and his form more than the sons of men. Now God's telling you what he saw. If you press me a little today, brethren, I'm inclined to the viewpoint that you have in this expression the terrible effect upon the person of Christ because of the 3 hours of darkness. I don't think it's primarily the punishment he took from man, but God looking down in the day when he made an atonement, and God tells us the terrible physical effects upon Christ in that terrible hour, those terrible hours of which you and I know so very little. Now the second stanza, please, will you? Notice, the question is raised, to whom is the arm of the Lord revealed? Now that's a title of Christ. The arm is the member by which work requiring strength is accomplished. So that Christ is the arm of Jehovah, the active member of the Godhead, when it comes to be doing work for God. Now notice the context, please, will you? Look, drop your eyes to verse 9 of Isaiah 51. Awake, awake, put on strength, O arm of the Lord, that's Christ. Awake as in the ancient days, in the generations of old. Art thou not it that cut Rahab that Egypt, and wounded the dragon? Art thou not it which hath dried the Red Sea, the waters of the great deep, hath made the depths of the sea away for the ransom to pass over? It was the arm of the Lord that divided the sea. It was Christ to open the way for the nation to go through. Oh, the power of the arm of the Lord.
But this is two ways. That's 10. The Lord hath made bare his holy arm. He stood up his sleeve. He's the revelation and manifestation of Christ in the kingdom. The Lord hath made bare his holy arm in the eyes of all the nations, and all the ends of the earth shall see the salvation of our God. So there you have the power of Christ to bring to fruition divine counsel and divine purpose in the coming day of millennial glory. Isn't this wonderful? The arm of the Lord, at the beginning of Israel's history, cut the sea in two. The arm of the Lord shall accomplish divine counsel in relation to the nation. And it's this glorious person whom we have come to know as the Lord Jesus Christ. The power of Christ to accomplish things for God. Verse 2. He grew up before God as a tender sapling, and as a living shoot out of dry ground. The dry ground is Israel. And here we have Christ in the eyes of God. In the midst of the arid waste, in the midst of a world of ugliness and moral rottenness, there came, arrived on the scene, one person, unfolding in all his moral excellence, in all his freshness and moral beauty. It's Christ, a living truth, fresh and radiant in his holy beauty. That's what he was before God, now before man. He hath no form nor lordliness. No grandeur by which to attract and allure the sons of men. He hath no form nor comeliness. And when we shall see him, there is no beauty that we should desire him. Isn't that true? Isn't that true today? And attract him to sinners. That's three. He is despised and left alone of men. Held aloof. A man of sorrows and grief's acquaintance. That's what he was down here in the midst of sinners. We hid, as it were, our faces from him. Hiding, as it were, our faces from him. They didn't recognize him. They gave him no place. He had no status. They're grooming the system for Caesar the Emperor, and Herod the King, and Pilate the Governor. There's even room in the system for Judas the Traitor. There's no room in the system for Christ. They cast their faces away from him. They had no time for him. He was despised, and we esteem him not. That's what the world thinks of Christ. That's one of the reasons why you can have no talk with them. They are not in fellowship with you in your appreciation of the Son of God. Now verses 4 to 6. Can I say this to you? That you can probably link up the five stanzas with the Pentateuch. In the closing verses of Isaiah 52, you have brought before you what you have in the rest of the song, the humiliation and exaltation of Christ. Just the same as in the book of Genesis, you have all every sheep thought from the ultimate divine revelation. The arm of the Lord, it links you with the book of Exodus. But now, please, in verses 4 to 6, you have come to Leviticus, and the life of the sanctuary is playing upon the death of Christ. Here now, here is the nation speaking in the day when they shall receive Christ, born in the day. Surely he hath borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. Yet in that day we did esteem him stricken, smitten of God, and afflicted. We thought he was suffering for his own sins. Now we recognize it's all different. That's hard. Now you preach and brother, and all of you. Remember that verse 5 primarily belongs to the nation of Israel. Verse 5 is the impassioned song in the day of your deliverance. Don't rob them of the wonder and glory of it all while you take the truth to yourself. It belongs to the ancient people. That day as they look upon Christ, they shall make their confession. He was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon him, and with his stripes we are healed. Isn't it wonderful by the grace of God that we have anticipated this? Time and again you've sat down with your Bible and you've led souls to Christ from verse 5 of Isaiah 53. Wounded for me. Wounded for me. There on the cross, he was wounded for me. Bruised. His sensitive soul feels with a thousand sorrows. Oh, the terribleness of Calvary, wounded. Bruised, pierced, that you and I might be healed. Verse 6. All we like sheep have gone astray. The universal, associated wandering as of a whole flock. We have turned everyone to our own way, a wandering in which each individual member of the flock actively shares. But that, the universal associated wandering of a whole flock, all the like sheep have gone astray, not itself. But it's a wandering in which each member actively shares. We have turned each one to our own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. Have you got that? Watch now the language, and I'll explain it to you. The Lord hath laid on him the iniquity of us all. That is, all that was ours was transferred to Christ. Now the background is the Day of Atonement. The Day of Atonement. Now let me say this. You understand, don't you, that in Hebrews 9, when the inspired writer is dealing with truth. And the background is the Day of Atonement, that he's dealing with the Day of Atonement as a whole. Now you've got that. Now please, if you don't see that, you'll be mixed up. He's dealing with the Day of Atonement as a whole. Every aspect of the service brought together. That's why he said, he makes statements like, without shedding of blood there is no remission. That's all it's different. When you come to Leviticus 16, the high priest entered three times into the holies. Now the first time he entered in, with both hands full of incense. No blood. That's why I told you that when you come to Hebrews 9, you must look at it, like as dealing with the Day of Atonement as a whole. But then the high priest went in the second time, and he sprinkled blood on him before the mercy seat for his sins and for the priestly house. Then he took in, you remember, the blood of the goat for the sins of the people. Now the whole thing is viewed as one action. The first time, incense, both hands full of incense. Oh, by the way, though, tell me, have you ever noted that at least once in the scriptures atonement was made by incense and not by blood? That's why I told you that the inspired writer is viewing the Day of Atonement as a whole. Now, the Lord hath laid on him the iniquity of us all, is not referring to the high priest going into the sanctuary. Oh no. It refers when the high priest came out, and there's the living goat standing. You remember he walked forward, and he pressed his hand upon the head of the live goat. And he confessed over it the iniquities of the nation. Then it says that they led the goat away into a land uninhabited, there to bear iniquity. And there it was in time that the sins of the nation were transferred to the head of the substitute. And yonder in the distances, it was borne away. And so you turn to Christ and the cross. The Lord hath laid on him the iniquity of us all. Oh, brethren, can you gather that? Millions upon millions of sinners saved. And the Lord laid upon Christ the iniquity of every one of us. It's a load that's gigantic. It is sins absolutely innumerable. Oh, the greatness and glory of the Christ who is able to bear the sins of many, thousands, millions of sinners. Oh, the wonder and glory of the sin bearer. He hath laid upon him the iniquity of us all. Verse 79. The death and burial of the Sabbath. This is the Numbers aspect, because the book of Numbers is distinctive, amongst other things, bringing before you types of the death of Christ. And so here he says this, verse 7, he was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. He is brought as a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before her shearers is dumb, so he opened not his mouth. It's Christ as the lamb in his ability to suffer uncomplainingly. Never a word of vindication. Never a cry of protest. You understand, please, a whisper from Christ of protest, and the voluntary aspect disappears. Notice carefully, he is led as a lamb to the slaughter. He has led the voluntariness of his death. He has led as a lamb the vicariousness of his death. He has led as a lamb to the slaughter the viciousness of his death. And during it all, when he was reviled, he reviled not again. When he suffered, he threatened not. Isn't that wonderful? Nor all that ploughed his back, no thorns that tore his brow, no nails that pierced his hands and feet could wring from him one cry. Twas deeper agony even than these to wake the cry. Eli, Lama, Sabbathana. That's it. He was hurried from prison and from judgment. Who shall declare his generation? He was cut off out of the land of the living, for the transgression of my people was he stricken. Brethren, have you ever noted that it was a verse like that that struck the Ethiopian eunuch? He's reading about a man cut off. You see, this eunuch's interested. By his side no wife had ever stood. The eunuch will weave this world without a seat to perpetuate his name. He's interested in this man. This man then appointed his grave with the wicked. But God overruled, and he was with the rich one in his death plural. Now that word death is in the plural. It's what a Hebrew scholar would call the majestic plural. It's a word used in an intensified way. I suppose it has a number of ideas with it. Possibly it has in view the fact that the death of Christ covers every aspect that sin has created. Tell me, you good men and women that read your Bible, have you ever noted that there's only one type before the fall? After the fall, there's a multitude of types like the Passover and the offerings. Now, the reason why you have a multitude of offerings is this: that sin had penetrated so deeply and far-reaching that God has to introduce a multitude of types to teach us the various aspects of the death of Christ to meet the inroads of sin. You see, you and I have little idea that only that sin did to the whole human race and the human creation, so that it's spoken of as death. Now please, God overruled. He was with the rich man in his death. There is indicated then that the new tomb received his body. Well, that's good. Because he had done no violence, neither was deceit in his mouth. No corruption had ever touched his holy humanity. So no tomb that had received the corruption of human flesh will receive his body. Listen, brothers and sisters, don't miss it. He who came forth from the virgin womb must be laid in a virgin tomb. Have you got that? He who came forth from the virgin womb can only be laid in a virgin tomb. Final phrase, verses 10 to 12. It pleased Jehovah to bruise him. He hath put him to grief. When thou shalt make his soul a trespass offering, the result will be this: he shall see his seed. Can you see that? Can you see Christ looking forward down through the ages to see the vast multitude that would trust him? He shall prolong his days in resurrection, and the pleasure of the Lord shall prosper in his hand. He shall see of the travail of his soul and shall be satisfied. By his knowledge shall my righteous servant justify many, for he shall bear their iniquities. Can you see Christ? Can you see the Deuteronomy character having in view the culmination of the purposes and counsels of God in relation to Christ? And so there is brought before us the satisfaction of Christ for us. Listen. Do you ever think about heaven? Do you something about when Christ gathers us all around himself, he shall see of the travail of his soul and be satisfied. Imagine the Son of God thinking it was all worthwhile to save you and me. Can we see the infinite eternal value of every believer to Christ? And at the end of the road, you'll find that you'll have found it to be worthwhile. He shall see of the travail of his soul and shall be satisfied. And as God closes, he indicates the day of victory and triumph and dominion. Tells us, therefore will I divide him a portion with the great, he shall divide the spoil with the strong. He'll do it in the day of his glory, based on the day of his suffering, because he poured out his soul unto death. He was number with the transgressors. He bare the sin of men and made intercession for the transgressors. Thank you.